The summer of 1977 stands as one of the most spectacular summers of all time for rock concerts. I was 16 at the time, and between the months of June and August of 1977, I saw bands like Led Zeppelin, of course Fleetwood Mac, Pink Floyd, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Yes, and just so many more. I saw so many shows throughout the whole entire year. Bands like Boston, ELO, Queen. It was unbelievable, the amount of concerts that, you know, we all saw back there in the 70s. The average ticket price for a concert was like between $4 and $10, averaged around $4.50, $5.50, and that was for good seats. It was a time when you purchased your tickets at the theater box office or at record or department stores where they had Ticketron outlets. Ticketron outlet was just basically a booth in a department store where you could buy tickets, not just for concerts, but for Broadway shows or pretty much for anything. So you didn't have to go into the city to go to a theater or to a concert hall to buy tickets. You can buy them, you know, if you lived in Jersey, if you lived in Long Island, if you lived in the Bronx. A lot of them were in places like, I remember we had one on Long Island in Abraham and Strauss at the Smith Haven Mall. And there were a few record stores. I believe Record World had Ticketrons in them too. And they were open all day long. Usually when the news of a big show, you know, came to town, then you'd have these long lines through these department stores. But most of the time, you could just go up to a Ticketron and buy tickets for anything you wanted. Okay, so it was an addiction in the 1970s going to concerts. It's what you did as a rock and roll fan. It was a very different world. And I tell you, I'm glad that I grew up during that time period, that I did not grow up like now, when kids are all pretty much just all embraced in their cell phones and their computers. And even though I do make a living, you know, on a website, and I need that, you know, I need the technology to be able to talk about stuff like this. Just growing up as a teenager, you didn't have all those distractions that they have now. And if you had a problem with somebody, you had a problem with somebody face-to-face, and then it was over. You didn't have it following you around on the internet like these poor kids do now. But anyway, going back to the 70s, the record industry, it evolves dramatically in 1976 when Peter Frampton releases this album called Frampton Comes Alive. And nobody had ever even heard of Peter Frampton at the time. I mean, you know, there were rock fans that were big fans of Frampton, and a lot of people knew him from Humble Pie, but younger people like myself, you know, we didn't really know that much about a lot of those older bands. We were at an age where we were really discovering music. But Frampton Comes Alive becomes this phenomenal, huge, you know, multi-million selling album. And it changes the music business because record companies go, hey, wait a second. You know, if we promote these albums heavily, then we could sell a lot of records. Look what we did with Frampton Comes Alive. It had that, you know, that beautiful cover of Frampton with his hair all lit up in pink and white from the stage lights. Everything about that album just worked. And so that changes the music industry. And then over the next couple of years, you see there's a handful of albums that come out that become like the biggest selling album of all time for that moment, because, you know, every year there's another one that comes out that kind of breaks all records. And so we see that with Fleetwood Mac. We see that with the Rumours album. And even though it was Fleetwood Mac's 11th studio album, it was only the second album with the band's new lineup that featured, of course, the newest members, Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham. Along, of course, with the longtime members, the founding member, Mick Fleetwood, John McVie, and Christine McVie. So at the time, Rumours would become the biggest selling album in history. And it all happened really quickly. Rumors sold 10 million copies within 30 days of its release. I mean, that was unheard of back then. And now, 47 years later, it remains in the top 10 of the biggest selling albums ever. Younger people who were not even born at that time may ask, well, you know, what fueled the album's massive success? Well, there are multiple reasons, but one of the biggest was the public's infatuation with the beautiful Stevie Nicks. When tickets went on sale for the Rumors tour, I mean, she was the number one reason why I wanted to see Fleetwood Mac. And I tell you, baby, I was not alone. So Fleetwood Mac plays two nights at Madison Square Garden at the end of June 1977. Now, earlier in that month, I saw Led Zeppelin in the same arena. So, you know, it would be pretty difficult for any band, any musical artist, to match the excitement of seeing, you know, the greatest rock and roll band of all time in New York City. And to me, that was Led Zeppelin. I mean, that was the pinnacle of any show I've ever seen. So, you know, it was tough for me to see anybody after that would match that excitement. And I have seen a few. I mean, Springsteen in 78 at the Garden was unbelievable. Prince, I believe it was the mid to late 80s, the Love Sexy tour was phenomenal at the Nassau Coliseum. But you have to remember that in 1977, Fleetwood Mac was probably the biggest pop band in the world. I mean, like we said, Rumors had sold 10 million copies by March of 1977. So tickets were in high demand for Fleetwood Mac. And I was glad to get, you know, to get a couple of them. So the night of the show, we don't know who's opening up. You don't know stuff like that back then. The opening act for Fleetwood Mac was Kenny Loggins. And he was perfect. You know, Kenny Loggins had not yet established his huge solo career. I mean, he would go on eventually to have some really big hits, you know, like I'm All Right from Footloose and a few really huge duets. But back then, he was more known as Kenny Loggins of Loggins and Messina. And Loggins and Messina was very, very much loved. They were a very much loved duo. Great band. Had a lot of hits. I mean, they had that massive single, Your Mama Don't Dance, but there were a lot of very special songs. And I remember when he performed that night, it's hard to remember his set, but I do remember as soon as he began singing Danny's song, the crowd went crazy. That one got a big response. So Fleetwood Mac hits the stage. They hit the stage hard. They opened up with Monday Morning from the 1975 Fleetwood Mac album. And, you know, it's interesting how many bands open shows with songs that also opened up, you know, the first side of their album. It makes sense, you know. Every band wants to open an album with a killer tune, usually an uplifting tune, a fast-paced tune that catches your attention right away. And for many groups, those songs that open up, you know, the album of the year that they're touring for tend to be the concert's opening song. It's like Foghat opening up with Fool for the City, you know, for years. That was the opening song of, you know, obviously the Fool for the City album. But certain bands just always opened up with the same songs. I remember seeing Queen earlier in the year. And Day at the Races had just been released. And they opened up with Tie Your Mother Down, which was the opening song on that album. So anyway, the band is smoking. You know, they're smoking from the start. And Lindsey Buckingham has just blown everybody away on the opening. He's singing, he's playing. He's definitely one of the most underrated guitar players in rock and roll. And after watching him perform like that, you would not have thought that anymore. Okay. Now, so Fleetwood Mac wastes no time in presenting their crown jewel. So many of us were there to see Stevie Nicks in the flesh. I mean, she was one of the most beautiful singers of all time. Her voice, her mystique, it all added to the crush that most 16-year-old males, like me, had on her. Of course, her fan base wasn't just males. It was also many females loved her. She was a role model for a lot of people. She was mysterious. I mean, there was just she was special. There was nobody like her in music. And pretty much nobody's ever been like her in music. So, for the second song of the night, John McVitie starts playing that iconic bass line to the song Dreams. I mean, it's a simple bass line. The song is, if you ever played in a cover band or if you're a musician yourself, you know that Dreams is basically two chords. It's an F chord and a G chord. It's one of the easiest songs to play. But it's incredible how Stevie Nicks writes this song based on two chords, and it just works so, so well because of what she's singing and how she's singing and the melody. And so she steps up, and by the way, Dreams becomes, that becomes the biggest, you know, hit single of the album. It's not the first single. The first single is Go Your Own Way, but Dreams goes all the way to number one. And it's a massive hit single. So she steps up to the microphone, you know, the good witch, all dressed in black, before this haunting but beautiful leafless tree, you know, showcased as a silhouette, graced by this golden moon, you know, is on the stage. I mean, it just looks so good. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful the way the stage is set up with that as the background. And then when she starts to sing, and now here you go again, it's just one of those moments you never forget. It was like when I saw Zeppelin just a couple of weeks earlier, the same month, you know, and they opened up with Song Remains the Same, and he steps up to the microphone and he sings, I Had a Dream. Those are moments that just gives you chills when you hear, you know, these rock gods and goddesses sing these iconic lines from these songs. It was breathless. It's witnessing that live was the only way you saw these people sing, these artists sing. There was no MTV. There was no computers. There was nothing. You know, the only time you saw your favorite rock stars play live was live. Well, unless you caught maybe a clip of them on Don Kersinger's rock concert Saturday night at 1 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, there was a few other shows on the weekend that you might be able to see them, or like on Saturday Night Live. But pretty much you had to see them live in concert. So after Stevie Nicks had pretty much put most of us in a trance, hey, Lindsey Buckingham, you know, hits us all in the heads with his guitar, pretty much saying, okay, time to snap out of it, people. And he does it in this very surprising way by going into that legendary guitar riff of the Peter Green song, Oh Well. I mean, we just weren't expecting that. Now, I didn't know too much about Fleetwood Mac before the Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham duo had joined the band, and they became so big, basically because of my age. But, I mean, this was their 11th album. So the band had been around a long time. They had gone through many different guitar players, and we've written a lot of different stories on Fleetwood Mac on the different eras of the band. But they dug into the past. They dug into the Peter Green era with the song Oh Well, and Lindsey Buckingham just tears it apart. I mean, he rips it up. He's smoking. His guitar playing is unbelievable, and the band is on fire. And it's hard for me to remember certain things. I think Stevie Nicks and Christine McKibbie, I think they had left the stage, and it was just the three of them playing. And it was this wild, crazy jam, and I was like, what is this song? I mean, you know, I don't think I had ever heard it before. You know, I'm talking about a concert that I saw 47 years ago, so some of it's a little cloudy, but I do remember it being real special. So after the three of them just go on this wild jam with Oh Well, there's a bit of a break, and then they go into the big one, the 1975 hit Rhiannon. And once again, Stevie Nicks just turns Madison Square Garden into her own garden. And the way she dances around the stage, and that, in that long black outfit. You know, we were just all like just gasping for air. It's hard to put into words what it was like watching Stevie Nicks perform Rihanna in 1977. I mean, I've seen Fleetwood Mac many times since then over the years, and they've always been great, but no show ever compared to what it was like in 1977 when all of it was so new to the audience and the band. I mean, I'm sure being teenagers at the time played a role in the experience. But in the end, it was the time period, you know, it was the 1970s that made it so special. So while Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham dominated the early part of the show, Fleetwood Mac would eventually turn to another much-loved member in Christine McKee when they dived into the song Oh Daddy, which featured Christine on lead vocals. You know, the balance that all lead singers of the band brought to Fleetwood Mac was such a big reason why, you know, this band had became so big in the late 1970s and ever since. Now, the rest of the show featured some of the best material from the 1975 Fleetwood Mac album and Rumors, of course. Once again, Stevie Nicks, I remember her just captivating the garden with stirring versions of Landslide and Goldust Woman, and Christine's Over My Head and You Make Love and Fun. They were also killer. And of course, Lindsey, he kept tearing it up on some of the songs that featured him on lead vocals or up front, sang in harmony with Christine and Stevie. Songs like Go Your Own Way, which was the first single from the album, and Secondhand News, another great tune. The concert, it ended with a stunning encore that opened with the, they ended the concert with Blue Letter, I remember. And then they left, and then they came back, and they just do this, like, smoking brilliant version of The Chain. And that's just one of those songs that Fleetwood Mac fans have come to really love over the years. And I'll never forget how powerful that was. And the show closes with a really tender and sweet version of Songbird, sung just by Christine. And by that time, we were done. I mean, it was just an emotional show. It was thrilling. It was so much better than I was expecting it to be. Like I had said, we had just saw Zeppelin, so that's a tough act to follow. But Fleetwood Mac was really special, you know, in those days. And they had taken us on this this phenomenal musical ride. And it was, what was even more impressive looking back is that almost all the songs, with the exception of All Well, were from just two albums. You know, one of them being one of the most significant records ever released, you know, and one of the biggest selling records of all time. And to have seen a concert promoting that album meant that we were part of one of the most amazing stories in classic rock history. And, you know, of course, we didn't realize that at the time. And we expected, you know, all this great music that was coming out in 76, 77. We were expecting that it was just going to continue forever. But as we've seen, you know, there's been a lot of great music since. But I don't think nothing can compare to the 70s and especially, you know, 76, 77, 78. Those are just phenomenal years in classic rock and music in general. And, you know, of course, maybe it's my age. Maybe it's being a teenager going to high school in the 70s at the time. Maybe that's why, you know, I love that music so much and so many of my friends do. And they always say that the music you love the most, the music you think is the best, is the music that you went through high school listening to. But I don't know. I think in the end, if we look back over the past 50, 60 years, you know, you had the 60s and then you had that time period in the 70s where we were lucky to have been alive and to have been young when the greatest rock albums of all time came out. And one of them was Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. My name is Brian Gajajian. I am the editor-in-chief of ClassicRockHistory.com. Thanks for listening, man. I'll see you next time.